You're listening to coverage from the 2008 Cattle Industry Convention and Trade Show.
All right. Thanks. Can you guys hear me back there? Well, excuse me. Well, Dave did a very good job of setting us up to talk about heifer development. And the one thing that we've noticed over the years is that it's actually a lot easier for us to synchronize cows. We get a far more consistent response. We've really struggled to figure out a great synchronization system that is very consistent in timed AI protocols in heifers. And that's sort of what led us to start considering some of the other factors that might be concerning us in terms of heifer development. For those of you that have developed heifers, you've probably seen in the print for the last 30 years that the ideal weight to develop your heifers to before the breeding season is to get them to about 65% of the mature body weight. And that data comes from some data in the mid-60s by Bob Bellows, and where they developed heifers to 55 and 65% of the mature body weight. And then when you go down and you look at all the factors here from conception all the way down to calf death loss, tended to favor the 65% body weight. That data has been produced about 40 years ago. So certainly that is sort of what the industry standard has become, and it all came out of this one study. But those of us that have done some work in this area have sort of figured out that, you know, there might be different ways to get to that point. And a few of us have done some work over the years in trying to develop heifers. Rather than developing them at a constant rate over a period of time from weaning to breeding, some folks have developed them fast and then allowed them to become remain at a certain weight for a period of time. And in actual fact, I'll show you some data here where we've essentially maintained heifers for a period of time and then pushed them using compensatory gain to get them up to that 65% mature body weight, 65% of mature body weight. So in 1983, Clanton and so on figured out that there really wasn't much difference in performance regardless of which method, whether you raised them fast and then held them at a weight for a period of time, or you maintained them continually throughout their development phase. And then we've done some work here to actually show maintaining heifers at an even gain rate. So we sort of get them to gain at approximately about 1.5 pounds a day for a period of time from when we wean them all the way till we AI them. Again, our target here is 65% of body weight. What we did then is we also fed heifers at about, we maintained heifers until about 60 days before the breeding season, and then pushed them using compensatory gain. And we got them to the same weight. I'll tell you one thing, though. Our IACUC, our animal use and care, which makes sure we handle the animals correctly from an animal use standpoint, didn't appreciate the fact that we essentially starved heifers for a period of time. But what we did end up finding out is that we saved about 12% more feed when we actually developed the heifers using compensatory gain, starving them for a period of time, and then pushing them. But the critical thing here is we wanted those heifers to get up to 65% of their mature body weight. When you look at the puberty data here, essentially the heifers that gained late took about one cycle longer, about 21 days longer to hit puberty than those heifers that gained continually. And obviously, I think we would expect that. But the main thing is here is that they both achieved exactly the same weight, about 690 pounds, before they hit puberty. And that to me is amazing. But the most amazing thing here is the fact that those late gain heifers responded better to artificial insemination, about 71% versus 56% to artificial insemination. And what I think we did there is we actually got those heifers to go through some form of a flushing effect, almost a phenomenon, where these heifers might have almost been a little bit stale by the time we AI'd them. And so in this study anyway, we saw a positive effect of late gain. Overall pregnancy rates were exactly the same. And then age of conception was exactly the same over the rest of the breeding season. So I think that's really critical. Rick is going to talk about some other things on heifer development here. But I think there are ways that we can likely save on our feed input costs and still get very good fertility.
Thanks, Cliff. Since I've been at Nebraska, we've been doing work on maybe looking at this target weight and asking, is this still appropriate for today's cattle? Some of the initial work was started by Gene Deitcher on this first study, developing heifers. This was a 3-year study to either 53 or 58% of mature weight. They were composite cattle that were approximately 5/8 Red Angus, 3/8 Simmental. And just want to take you through the reproductive data. Out to the fourth pregnancy diagnosis, we saw no difference at all in conception rates. We measured calf parameters, weaning weights, and again, we saw no difference in comparing these two percentages of mature weight. And we're looking at our Goodmanson Ranch in the middle of the Sandhills, a 1,200-pound cow, so we're just over 600 pounds at breeding. The follow-up study, and this was just published in the February issue of Journal Animal Science, going to even lower target weights of 50 to 55% of mature weight, we did allow those animals 15 more days to become pregnant that were developed lighter, because we didn't know if we were approaching maybe some threshold where some of these animals wouldn't be puberal. And what we saw was a slightly delayed calving date in those animals developed lighter in this study. And again, this was a 3-year study as well with something over 260 head of heifers. One thing I would point out, similar to the previous study, and I didn't show you the data, but those heifers that were developed lighter were lighter at any point we ever measured them beyond. And we only have weights out to about the fourth pregnancy diagnosis. But we think maybe we're suppressing mature size as well. Pregnancy rates were not different here. So are we approaching some point where a lot of these lighter heifers aren't puberal? Because the older data would tell us that, and this is from Fort Keogh as well, that animals bred on their first puberal cycle are less fertile than if they're bred on their third cycle. And if you put embryos in animals that have only cycled once versus three times, we have differences in pregnancy rates. So the next studies that I designed were to take heifers to 50% of mature weight, but half of them received MGA. And then we turned bulls in, we put them all together at about a week before you would give prostaglandin. We did not give prostaglandin to these heifers, so thinking that MGA may jumpstart some of these animals if they weren't puberal. Well, what we see, this is with this data that was published this month, Journal Animal Science as well is in there. We saw heifers that were under 600 pounds about a month before bull turn-in. Look how many were puberal. There was almost 80% puberal weighing under their 50% target weight. Would you expect MGA to have an effect? And no, it did not. In a 45-day breeding season, 90% pregnancy rates. These studies were designed using certain feedstuffs to target a certain rate of gain to get to a certain body weight. Since then, I've been doing work in heifer development systems. Are there ways of developing heifers that require less feed inputs? And what we've gone to, we're in the middle of some of this work right now, is heifers developed on winter grass or on corn stalks, and then they come back to pasture and all together for about 48 days before breeding. Won't go into this a lot, but I want to show you just one slide on this. We're looking at some strategic supplementation around the time of insemination, either artificially or with natural service. And how are we targeting this with natural service to have a large proportion of those animals being pregnant or becoming pregnant? We've gone to, on all our cattle at the ranch, this form of synchronization. And this came from when I was at Miles City. In a 32-day breeding season at Fort Keogh with three different calving seasons, we had greater than 85% pregnancy rates in a 32-day breeding season. By turning bulls in here, and in a week, 5 days later, everything got prostaglandin. So think about that. Think about that with natural service, what Dave said about Harlan Hughes data, saying the most profitable herds were herds that calved in the first 21 days. This might be a low-input system. And I've even got people using this with AI. They're saying, we just want something simple. We're going to turn bulls in, give everything prostaglandin, and then we'll breed AI to whatever comes in heat. This will not abort animals at this time. A lot of you might be thinking that, but they won't have a functional corpus luteum yet. We went actually in a Fort Keogh work out to 7 days, and it is possible some of those animals that got bred on day zero might be aborted on day 7, but other work would show that they will just cycle back, and that is very fertile cycle. Okay, the people have asked, okay, you allow those animals two cycles to become pregnant. What if you wanted them to become pregnant in a very short period of time, like if you wanted to artificially inseminate? So we developed heifers to more traditional two-thirds of mature weight, or run these heifers on stocks. These were some purchased heifers, not from the ranch. And then they were exposed to different levels of nutrition about a week before AI through 2 weeks after, and within each group. And I'll tell you, we saw no differences in pregnancy rate. The one big difference we are seeing is these lighter developed heifers on corn stalks, they don't gain much on stalks during the winter, but when they hit summer grass, they will outgain those heifers developed in a lot by close to half a pound a day. So again, Cliff's talking about compensatory gain, maybe a flushing effect. We time bred these off MGA prostaglandin, time bred them, and we got what Dave Patterson said we would get, 50% on time breeding off MGA prostaglandin. But look what happened when we changed the plane of nutrition about a week before AI through 2 weeks after. And these heifers were on a pretty low rate of gain before AI, about a pound and a half. And when I'm talking about high energy, I'm talking about 4 pounds of additional corn, not some 10 to 12 pounds of corn. But again, there's several instances I'm going to show you today where I think this flushing effect is really something we need to consider, strategic supplementation. This is some work that we did with some heifers in the Sandhills on a cooperator ranch. This represents about 1,200 heifers. We supplemented heifers prior to the prostaglandin shot through about 2 weeks after. This is the calving distribution. Those percent born in the first 21 days, 75 versus 68. And this was prostaglandin. Half the heifers got prostaglandin, half did not. So again, we had 76% calve in the first 21 days if they got prostaglandin, 67% if they did not. And this is with natural service. Developing heifers on corn stalks, we saw a lower rate of gain than winter grass. We saw less animals cycling before breeding, but it didn't affect pregnancy rates. Supplementation around the time of breeding improved our AI conception rates, but didn't affect overall pregnancy rates. We're finding that our costs are reduced. And this is comparing 53 to 58% of mature weight. I guess I don't know if this extrapolates to three times that if we look at 65% to 50% of mature weight, but certainly reducing costs. One thing I guess a lot of times we don't think about, if you have a vet preg checking in the fall and you find open heifers, you're a lot of times not very happy. But if you don't have a lot in them, you take advantage of compensatory gain. Selling these open heifers was profitable, and a lot of times these heifers were worth as much as their bred counterparts. And we were ultrasounding them early in August, something the feeders really wanted. Is it an opportunity to determine adaptability early? Instead of getting all our heifers pregnant and finding out we can't get them bred back after they calve once, by having a short breeding season and developing to lighter target weights. Does this result in lighter mature weights? At least our data would indicate such. Are they more efficient? We don't know that. We haven't measured feed efficiency. One thing I think is key here, though, you have to have animals on a plane of nutrition that is allowing them to take advantage of that compensatory gain during the breeding season. And again, I think we're seeing that flushing effect that Cliff alluded to. Does it affect longevity? We don't have data beyond about 4 years on these development programs, but Cliff showed you a slide on these different types of gain getting to the same target weight. This is some work that Harv Freetley did. He did not, I asked him, I said, do you have records on these animals as far as longevity? And what he was able to find in the Clay Center cattle was that the animals that were developed on a low high that Cliff showed you, there was more in the herd at 5 years of age. So is it an opportunity to teach animals? I would have to think animals that were on a low rate of gain had to eat something that was poor quality, and maybe that allowed them to adapt to what they were going to be expected to eat as cows. Well, what's changed in 40 years? This is the genetic trend for scroll circumference. Out till about 1985, the early 90s, is pretty flat. What happened since then? Somebody's been paying attention to scrotal circumference. And what's the relationship with scrotal circumference in the daughters born to bulls that have larger scrotal circumference? It decreases age at puberty. The other thing is, these are crossbred cattle. We know the advantages of heterosis on reproduction. But we do have some data with more straight-bred cattle, and we think these lighter heifers' development systems work there as well. Well, what if, Cliff, what if you change body condition? And we talked about flushing, but what about going to high and low body condition? Can we affect reproduction that way in heifer development?
Well, yeah, Rick, I think you ask a good question. And so we set up a study here to actually look at body condition score changes. The one thing that struck me while Rick was talking is maybe our responses to these protocols are not because the protocols are inconsistent, it's because we manage them inconsistently. Not only are heifers dumb cows, but we also try and treat these animals. Every one of us treats these animals differently. So just looking at Rick's presentation and here, the way we manage heifers is so different from the way we manage cows. We manage cows far more consistently, and they've been through all of this before. But if we manage heifers from a body condition score standpoint, what we wanted to do is have a look, and we were noticing that we'd go into herds and we'd go into a herd and see that we're getting very good pregnancy rates in heifers that were at a body condition score 4, 4.5, and we were getting poor pregnancy rates at times in herds that had very good condition. We'd call folks and we'd say, how was your fertility? And they'd say, very poor. And you'd say, what was your condition like? And they would say, it was excellent. We thought we'd fed these cattle well. They were at a condition score 6. What we've started to notice is that animals that are changing in condition is far more critical than absolute condition. And so what we ended up doing then is we took a bunch of heifers and we fed a bunch of heifers to get them to a condition score 7. And then we kept half of the heifers at a body condition score 5. We maintained them at that condition score 5. Now our goal, again, is I've got a reputation with Iacuc because what we ended up doing is starving these heifers again. And we bled these animals 3 times a week and wanted to find out when they quit cycling and what condition they stopped cycling. After that, then we started feeding them again, and we fed those heifers again, and we're still bleeding them every day to see when every second or third day to see when they started cycling again, to see if there was any nutritional memory, see if these animals actually remembered at what condition they started up here, and if there was a difference between the two groups. Well, you'll notice we started them off at both at body condition score 5 and a 7, just like we targeted. When we starved these heifers, they both got down to body condition score 3 before they stopped cycling. So they took a long time to get down there, especially those heifers that started off fat. It took them about an extra 90 days to stop cycling. But what do you think actually happened when we fed them again to see when they started cycling? What we ended up finding out is those heifers that started out fat initially at a 7 were starved, had to get all the way back up to body condition score 6 before they started cycling, versus those heifers that started at a 5. All they needed to do was get back to a 5. So we're fairly convinced right now that there is some nutritional memory, and I think we find this, especially with those heifers that have developed in feedlots. People get them too fat, and they say, oh, we should back off. Well, I'm not so sure that that's the best thing. And if you have heifers that have developed fairly thin, they're not pushed all that fast, and then pushed closer to the breeding season, I think your responses are going to be far better. So with that, I think we're going to wait for questions and hand it over to Rick.
I'm going to talk to you about some work that I've been involved with, again, at the Goodmanson Ranch. Cattle, this is our headquarter facilities in the middle of the sand hills on range cow management. Every operation has a unique set of resources as far as the forage base, genetic base, and level of management. And I think the decisions you make, whether it be applying new technology or just general management decisions, need to keep one thing in mind, and that's why we're here today, right, with all the speakers, that reproduction is the single most important factor for profitable beef production. A lot of times we think about management of animals after they're born, right? What about before they're born? there's more and more evidence, and you're going to see several popular press articles coming out, because I'm involved with about two or three of them right now on this research. Can we affect animals' potential before they're even born? I want to back up and just give you some background on when and why these studies began. We know in a dormant forage environment that protein drops, and what happens when protein drops? Intake goes down, animals physically can't eat enough to meet their nutritional requirements. So what are two management options we might look at to allow animals to graze year-round on this poor quality feedstuff? Well, one thing you might do is wean early. That would put animals in a better body condition going into the winter period. They would be able to lose more condition. Or another common practice is to supplement. So in this first study, we have two weaning dates and then supplementation with protein or not within those two weaning dates. And what do we see on the cow side? We saw a change in body condition due to weaning, that with these animals weaned early in August versus November, maintain more body condition before through the winter period. But what happened before breeding, I think, is very important. But another piece of evidence, and there's several in here, that changing that condition, like Cliff talked about, up to breeding, which do you think had the higher pregnancy rates on these cows? They were the same. What about the effect of supplementation in the winter? Again, those animals that were supplemented maintained greater condition prior to calving, and then they were on increasing plain and nutrition before breeding. Which do you think had the higher pregnancy rates? They were the same. So take home.